Time now for Workout Wednesday, brought to you by Custom Fit. Want to look good, feel good, eat good? Go to CustomFit.ca, and they can make out a package and system that works for you. Paul Plakas, 20 years in the biz, joins us once again. Plakas, how you doing?
Gregor, sometimes it's a curse being blessed with so much to offer. Thought you'd like that one.
I like that. Yeah. Hey, I like that. It's better. Oh, good. Oh, I love it. It's great. It is very good. Today I want to talk about the different types of movements and the pros and cons of each. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the advancements and how things are changed. And, you know, it seems that something that was thought of good 5 years ago, maybe not so much now. So I want to talk with first, like, no joint movement. Pros or cons?
So that basically is like an isometric contraction where you're basically your muscles aren't really moving or moving a joint. You're having tension in certain areas of your body, but nothing's really moving. So an example would be like a typical planking exercise. So when you have somebody doing a plank, they have their elbows on the floor, they have their toes on the floor, they're tightening their glutes and their abs, and they're just holding that position for time. Nothing's supposed to move. And the theory behind that is that you're trying to develop stability in the deep abdominal muscle fiber of the abdominal muscle fibers to prevent your back from going into a collapse or excessive curvature, which is thought to give stability to the spine. So exercises such as that, or maybe even like a wall sit, or doing just kind of an exercise like a yoga posture, for example, where you're holding a warrior pose or a one-leg balancing pose, those exercises are great for developing maybe some stability. And if you have pain moving your body or joints from an injury, this might be a place to start from, whereas this, you can find a position where there is no pain, still put some tension on a muscle so the muscle gets some activity and work in it without having to rely on getting pain and feedback to your body where you feel you get develop inflammation. So it's a place to kind of start with. A lot of physiotherapists use it.
Now, the what's the con of that?
Well, the only problem with that would be that if you are doing like an isometric contraction or holding a position, you're only strong in that position. So your body has a strength curve over a whatever movement you have. So, for example, when you do a wall sit, you're only strong in that position. Like, you're not strong like 6 or 7 inches below that or above that. You have to have movement to develop power and strength over a range of motion. So if you're only holding a position, you're only strong in that position, so it's limited. It's good therapeutic-wise for some people who can't move very well because of pain, but again, there are some limitations too.
So now let's go to a single joint movement. A, what is it? And B, what's the best ones you recommend?
Yeah, well, single joint movements, they were predominantly very popular back in, you know, the 70s and 80s where bodybuilders sort of dictated what kind of exercises people did. So you would use exercises like bicep curls and leg extensions and leg curls. You would basically isolate your whole body so that only one part would move at a time, and you would just put a lot of tension on it until it got bigger and stronger. So an example of a good isolation exercise would be some sort of rotator cuff movement. So that's an example of where you don't really want other parts of your body helping you do the movement. You only want the rotator cuff to do the exercise. So it's very easy. Like if you go to a physiotherapist, they'll often put a towel between your elbow and your waist to hold tight so that your arm's not moving backwards or to the side. So you're not using other muscles to help you move a band or a weight. So there's an example of where isolation exercises are really good because you don't want other parts helping. You want to work the area that is weak and make only that area get stronger so that it is not the weak link in a movement you're trying to perform.
So single joint movements now, Paul, as you mentioned in the 70s and 80s, are they still worthwhile now to do, or would you rather do a no joint and multi-joint and skip single? Should we still be doing single joint movements?
Yeah, single joint movement is fine if you have like an area of the body that's sort of a weak link in the chain, okay? So if you have like problems maybe with your glutes working properly, that kind of thing, it might be a good idea to try to do some hip bridging and stuff like that, which is like an exercise where your hips are extending and just having the glute muscle do the work. So if you have an area, if you have a problem where, yeah, some muscles are weak in relation to other muscles, single joint movements might be good. But where they're lacking is that they're not a great way to train the body if you're like an athlete or if you want to do more functional, real-life, purposeful activities, because your body kind of works from head to toe as one integrated unit. So you kind of want to train it like that when you're in the gym if you're trying to train for a sport or having more of a functional approach to exercise.
Paul Blackus from Custom Fit joins us now. Multi-joint movements, of course, have become the biggest one to do now. Also, they're the most difficult.
Yeah, multi-joint movements can be very difficult because it takes really a coordination between your brain and your muscles and then all the joints in your body to do whatever movement you're trying to do. So if you're new to the exercise, you are basically, it's kind of like riding a bike for the first time. You're going to be wobbling all over the place. Your brain and your muscles don't have a lot of synchronicity and a lot of efficiency in transmitting that neural impulse through your body and your joints to work properly. So it's almost like taking your kids skating for the first time. They're going to be like all over the place, kind of wobbly, not sure what's going on. Once they get their center of gravity, once their nervous system knows, okay, this is how your foot's supposed to be in relation to your hip and everything else, everything becomes more efficient, and then they just get better at it and better at it. And, you know, even at the NHL level, you got some guys that are just very efficient skaters. They just have a natural tendency just to skate, and it looks effortless for them, where other guys have to really struggle to skate. So that's one thing that's great about multi-joint training is you develop that efficiency and that neuromuscular coordination through all the joints of the body. It burns a lot of calories because you are activating a lot of muscle groups, and you get, if you want to burn energy and expend energy, it's very exhausting cardiovascularly, metabolically, and it's purposeful to most stuff that you do in sports and real-life activity.
Paul Blackus joining us from Custom Fit. Now, a squat's like a two-joint action. We go to, you can get that all the way up to six-joint action if you're having like the torso rotation and your overhead press and everything. That's where now, when you go into, five or six or joint movements, Paul,
yes,
is there more opportunity for injury? And are those movements that people shouldn't be doing until they've really, excelled and mastered the two and three joint movements?
No, exactly. Yeah, basically you kind of want to work somebody from simple movements to more complex movements. So once they develop the simple movements and their ability to do them, yeah, you make them a little bit more difficult. So like, for example, if you're going to train a gymnast and you're teaching them to vault over a pommel horse, you're not going to get them to do a triple twisting backward flip, land it, and the first time you're going to teach them to vault over it once, maybe do a single flip. But yeah, you go simple to complex movements, and once a good trainer would be able to see, okay, can this person execute this movement in perfect technique? And if they can, great, I'm going to challenge their nervous system a little bit more and make it a little bit more complicated, and so on and so on, until it becomes as difficult as you can make that movement, and you progress it to other stuff. So yeah, simple to complex. You want to work with a good base of support, with less base of support, less weight to more weight, less reps to more reps. You always build according to the person's fitness level, where they're at, and the kind of where they want to get to. And, you know, working with a good trainer will know how to do that without injuring the person, because that's the key, is not to go too fast too soon and then get injured, and then you have to heal, and you're back to doing no joint movements.
Paul, always appreciate your insight, buddy. We will talk to you tomorrow, and try not to get weighed down too much with that burden that you're carrying today.
Absolutely, yes.